So I was spending some time on the internet last week, and I wanted to learn about security architecture and web pages. I thought it was a pretty good topic to study, but then I realized, you know, it's just same old song and dance. Hey, hi ho! If you don't understand that joke, you're in the right spot. This is Nerd Roundup. Nerd Roundup is a bunch of technical dudes that get together each week and tell jokes and talk about the current events from the standpoint of programmers. By the way, that SAML song and dance is SAML, Security Architecture Markup Language. So now you learn something new. You've already wasted like a whole minute and you've learned something new at the same time. Every week I get together with my friends, like I said. I think it teams who can relax and have fun can do damn near anything. And the only way I know how to do that is just to demonstrate it for you guys. So welcome aboard. For the next hour or so, we'll try to entertain and educate you. A lot of technical stuff, but not much content. So today we've got Greg Young, John Curran, and James Gurning. Hi, guys.
Samuel, too.
Hey.
Hey, Dan.
Welcome. Okay, Pasta. So we'll go left to right. Greg, what you been doing this week?
Oh, boy, I'm still at it with FedEx trying to get my passport.
You're not on some kind of terrorist watch list or something.
It is the slowest 3-day priority service I've ever used.
Well, you got the next month overnight deal, I guess.
Same price, same slow service.
Oh, what's hilarious is even in talking with them, they start saying things like, "Oh, sir, but that's not from FedEx. That's one of our vendors." And it's like, "Well, I'm sorry, but I paid FedEx the money."
it's like the cost of DHL with the speed of the postal service. Yeah, oof. John, what you been up to this week?
Oh, well, let's see, a few different things. Deployed a new feature to my firefighting app on the weekend. Working on the school board budget. That's always joyous, but my evil plan is coming into play, where turning last year's tumultuous world into nice calm, and it's really working well. It's actually a fascinating study in organizational dynamics. And we're doing a little consulting with some teams that are actually not afraid to collaborate. So it's kind of exciting.
Wow.
That does. Yeah, it is kind of wild.
I know when you get those good teams, you're like, "Hey, can I get a picture with you guys? I'm so happy to be here." James, what you been up to?
Well, let's see. We had to leave the Southern office. We were out for a golf cart ride the other night and parked the cart for 5 minutes when the neighbor's house came out. There's an alligator underneath it.
Of course.
And got the house packed up, then drove 1,384.9 miles, 23.4 miles per gallon, and 21 hours, 14 minutes back to Illinois.
I'm just curious, how did you prepare the alligator?
Well, the alligator was still alive when we pulled away.
Okay.
It was just a little cute one about that big.
Oh, it was a baby. Okay, yeah, you just kind of leave him to be.
Well, yeah, like definitely.
Alligator veal.
I wanted to go poke him, but he does still have a pretty good set of jaws on him.
You don't do that.
Don't need to mess with that. So.
I would suggest the next time you find a bigger one, deep frying. It's actually quite good.
Well, I did have some a couple weeks ago at a place. I've had it before, and it was pretty bad. And finally had some good and well, nicely done alligator tail. I got a piece of tail in Florida, just saying. Let's see what else. And I went outside last night in Illinois, and I had no danger of alligators, bears, snakes, or panthers. None of those dangers were around here.
So. Yeah, that's boring, really.
Yeah, it was pretty boring.
So that's pretty good mileage for a golf cart.
That wasn't the golf cart. That's the Explorer. Yeah, the golf cart's totally green. It's got batteries, you know.
Okay. Oh, yeah, until you have to dispose of it.
Yeah, right. Has anybody done a lifetime cost on you know, environmental impact on electric cars. Anybody seen that anywhere?
No, we're ignoring that fact.
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Build more nuclear power plants.
It is the under the is cool category. If it's under the is cool category, we don't talk about none of that other stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Dan, what have you been doing this week?
Well, funny you should ask, James. I have. I saw Bob online a couple days back, and he said, "You know, I was taking a ride on my bike, and I determined what my next book would be." And I don't know, for whatever reason, I was sleeping that night. I thought, you know, I know what my next book's going to be. So I don't know if Bob like did that to me with some sort of magic Bob powers or whatever, but I think I'm going to write a book on functional programming smells. I haven't seen anybody that does that before. It would be a nice hands-on class I could teach. And so that's next up. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
All right. Cool.
So our first site is Don't Wordle. This made me sad.
Made me sad, losing in four turns.
The object of Don't Wordle, it's like anti-Wordle. There's an anti-Wordle site. It's you cannot guess the Wordle.
So I actually sent this to somebody I know who does Wordle regularly. They were less than impressed by it.
Did they get through all six words?
Yes. I have to double check. But in looking through it, they were less than impressed with things.
See, what the thing is that as you guess the wrong word, hopefully, it gives you the number of words remaining, which is just depressing. And the premise here is that Wordle is not a difficult game to cryptographically solve because there's only so many words in English. But that's not really the game. The game is, can you remember cool words? That's the real game. So this is fun trying to do it in reverse, though.
So
I was kind of disappointed that with 117 options on the third word, I managed to get the word in the fourth guess.
Oh, wow.
And you're trying to not get the word.
I made it down to one option, and it said, you only have one word left. You have to undo your last guess.
I never played Wordle, but this is kind of interesting because, my third guess, it said, oh, no, there's only two... Something like there's only two words left and you have three more tries. You have to undo. So I was like, oh, that's kind of, it's an interesting, like they reverse engineered the game or something. I don't know. It's just sort of funny.
That negative space of what are the words I'm not common.
Yep.
Yes.
I actually put in a word that I know is a word and they didn't know about.
A dizzy, I think, was my first one because there's not a lot of words with Z's in them.
Yeah. I wasted, well, the first two words I got none on. It was great.
Oh, that's wild.
Third word I got one letter. Fourth one got all of them.
Wow. Well, I'm
trying to not do it.
I enjoy Wordle. I enjoy Quordle more. This is sort of like the, I'll say, the poor man or dumb man's crossword puzzle. You can do it in 5 minutes, be done with it, and move on. It's a kind of get you going in the morning for me.
I say mine for at night.
Yeah, you're always like at 11:45, seems to me. And I'm always doing mine like 5 a.m. Okay, so this next article, I will admit to scanning most of it because it was long as heck. But this is the scaling hypothesis. And this is a discussion amongst artificial intelligence folks of, as I'm going to bastardize this guy's argument, but hey, if we make these things big enough, they get super cool. So it's like, let's just keep making bigger and bigger neural nets and we'll eventually get whatever we want to get out of it. I have problems with this.
Yeah, there's an interesting line in here that they said they have no coherent model of how it happens.
Yes.
And it's alarming where the intelligence comes from. It's like, I thought that was kind of interesting.
So this is a game of build the automated bullshitter, which I'm okay with that. AI can do some cool stuff, but we admit that we're trying to create a system that guesses better than we can. And like I said, I'm fine with it, but it's not intelligence. It's just a predictive engine.
What really surprised me in the article was they continued to say where they thought the boundaries were, and then it continued to just go past where those boundaries were.
We were doing some really cool stuff.
Really makes you question how good they were at setting where the boundaries actually were.
Yeah, this is, if you guys have heard of the ELIZA program in the late 60s, early 70s, this was where the guy did the fake, a guy in the early 70s wrote a program that would just take whatever you said and turn it into a question.
Eliza.
Yes, and it people would spend hours with this thing, and all it did was just ask a question of whatever you said, and it got you kept going. And so what he found was that people were actively wanting to believe this thing was actually more intelligent than it was. Now, welcome to Eliza, like with a million lines of code, Eliza.
So here's one of their main concerns with this. So this would be funded probably like through a government, right? This kind of research? I'm going to guess they're going to have a problem with funding because they said their primary concern is that it may not support the status quo.
Yeah, I worry more about the researchers than the tools themselves because it's being way oversold. These guys are reading a lot more cognition into the system that actually exists. And if you read the Hacker News comments, they pretty much call them out on all of that.
Wonder if you set two of these things up, you have one watching CNN all day and have one watching Fox News all day and see what they think of the world.
Yeah, I find it, you know, if people would take Eliza, which is 200 lines of BASIC, if they would take that and spend hours and think it was intelligent, what in the living fuck are we creating with this? What societal impact is this going to have? And I don't think anybody's asking that question. Yeah.
I think it might even be interesting to go a little bit further than what you were just saying with CNN and Fox. We could also start throwing in things like HuffPo. And so you have varying levels on each side, and you see where they turn out.
Let it watch everything?
No, so you have different levels of them. So you have one that they don't really watch CNN. They get all their news. You have another that's watching CNN. You have another that's watching Fox. You have another that's watching, I don't know, some right-wing. And then we see where all of them sit.
Ooh, we put them into robots and make the robots fight. Now that would be cool.
There's a winning idea there, Dan.
I'd pay $20 to watch some robots fight. Oh, by the way, in a related note, there was another article that was just almost too weird for this, and I didn't put it on here, but the guy was talking about how you can look up an image in GPT-3, which is the current model Google's running, and there's like some arbitrary words next, like if you see a guy feeding a bird, somehow it makes up a word, and if you search for that word, you see other people feeding birds, and his hypothesis was that the AI was inventing its own language, and that's just like, I don't know what to do with that. Yeah, that's just too weird. But he got shot down pretty quickly on Hacker News, so I just said, okay, well, I'm going to let that go for a while. Because if there's some new language, like physical language to learn to talk to computers, I'm kind of done with this life. I'm going to go like live in like a cabin and, you know, have a little campfire every day. That's
it would actually be most likely a very, very difficult language for us to speak because computers would have completely different needs than what humans would have.
Yes. And the thing is if they were modifying their languages like humans do, every time we speak, we modify our inflection in our language. If computers did that, we couldn't keep up with them. They would invent new dialects every afternoon. It'd be impossible for a person to talk to them.
Sarcasm would be quite interesting.
That's one of the best and most difficult challenges.
Yes. Okay, so this next one Greg and I were talking about, this is freaking really wild. This is getting a wireless network to under the skin to talk to the brain. Greg, you want to talk about this a little bit?
Hey, before you do that, I went to this webpage and it wants me to accept some foreign language.
Yeah, click the one on the right.
Yes, the one on the right. I clicked the one on the left.
Really? Got a village? Yeah. I just did a translation of that. It says, got a village. It's like,
Yes. Yes, I own a village.
Okay. Are you sure that's going to work out all right for me?
How many camels do you have in your yard?
It's only a small pueblo.
7 camels. Okay, you come in. Okay, so Greg, did you read this?
I did, sir.
Tell us
what it's having, cool. Well, it is cool in general, but having your brain connected via Wi-Fi is kind of interesting and disturbing as well.
So what they can do, there's a certain frequency of radio waves that will travel through the fat under your skin, but will not travel through your muscles or in the air. And so they're saying, hey, we'll just like build a network out of your fat layer. And you'll have like a body-fi network.
Which also suggests that Weight Watchers would be reducing your network capacity.
Your bandwidth, sure, yeah.
Well, you're assuming the size of your flab is somehow proportional to your bandwidth.
Yeah, if you need to do a lot of holographic stuff, you need to like hire like a big dude.
What's amazing is if you, I don't know if you watch the video, is stunning. The video of the chimp playing a game and getting fed when doing something good, right? Mm-hmm. Nice reward, and he's got a joystick. You know, it's like Pong. You know, he's got a joystick to hit this target, and then he gets fed. And then so while he's doing the motion with his hand, they're recording his brain waves. And then pretty soon they realize they can now just play his, basically his thoughts into the system. So they disconnect the joystick. So he's still running it like he thinks, but the system is still working and he's still playing the game. And then they take the joystick away and he's still playing the game. And it's like, holy shit. In other words, they mapped his thoughts into motion. It's like insane. And like then they have a little plea. Hey, if you, this is cool. Even if you never worked with the brain, come work for it. I'm like, oh, yeah, damn. That's outrageously cool. Yeah. I mean, for like people who, you know, have lost a limb or something, because that's, you know, there's some very rudimentary things they have now that you can, you know, move stuff, but... This was just astounding.
We're going to see a lot of bananas ordered on Amazon in the near future. At least until they get this spread to people.
I do like the, notice how the two out of the three pairs of pants, I believe, are influenced by Levi Strauss and Wrangler jeans, which is just kind of hilarious. I don't know why that I noticed that, but hey, there's an American invention, jeans, and it's over in the Institute, you know, all over the world. Really funny.
Yeah, the mental thing, I don't even know where to go with that. So far, the tech isn't good enough. I think they have to, don't they have to still do embedded electrodes, or they're just getting out of that maybe? Or...
No wires.
Whoa. Did you ever read a Old Man's War?
Oh, yeah, that was that Werner Vinge?
I forget who the author is, but you've got this brain pail installed, so it's like you're on instant recall. For any information you want that's in the universe, you just think about it and you're connected. That's where it's going, Dan.
Dude, I can't get my brain working for me, much less somebody else.
Poor computer that'd have to listen to my brain waves. Oh, boy.
It's going to be the sound of static.
Hope it doesn't echo.
Who's in here? Who's in here? Who's in here? It's me. It's me. Okay, so this next article is a personal kind of hobby horse of mine. This is sort of a deeper thing, but it is interesting. Friendships are formed via shared context, not shared activities. And so I'm going to give you guys a little background, kind of where I'm coming from. I did this thing on backlogs, I did this thing on analysis, and I came to the conclusion that whenever you interact with people, you're creating your own sort of special dialect, and we just do it all the time without thinking. And what that means is that if you spend enough time with people, you can actually learn what the other person's thinking and work really quickly in a tech environment. Whereas if you don't spend any time with people, you could write a 100-page document and still get crap stuff you didn't want. And this guy sort of saying the same thing. He's saying you spend a lot of time with somebody like in college, you're going to work better together later on in tech, whereas if you just meet as strangers and never get to know one another, it's going to be a tough thing. You just can't get together to do something and have that work.
One thing I noted on here, and this is because I was in a fraternity when I was in university, is they actually discussed the concept of hazing in a fraternity. I will quote, "One way to create a shared context is through shared struggle. This is why many organizations implement ritualized hazing to initiate new members. But the important thing is not the hazing. It's a sense that you are working together with your fellow humans to achieve a superhuman goal."
Yes. Yeah, even today.
And then there's a note that he uses the term hazing to mean any way of excluding members from joining an organization. For example, a job interview is a form of hazing.
Yes. Yeah, I can walk into a bar anywhere in the United States and meet somebody who was also a Marine, and within about 5 minutes, we're talking about our shared struggle, and it's that struggle itself becomes sort of this keystone of making other analogies and this whole... We were taking this class, Melissa and I, we got paid to take an online class last month. It's a long story. Some friends of her were putting it together, and I needed, like, guinea pigs. But one of the things they did was they talked about a quality time. And what we teach people is that quality time with kids is like you're going to, like, spend 1 5-minute period of where you try to do useful stuff. And that's not the way that works. What you really want to do with family members is be there all the time. And then these little magic moments happen that you don't plan. You can't go in and plan for the quality because it just doesn't work that way. I found that very counterintuitive.
Well, we can give one exception to this, both in the military and in fraternities and such. Hell Week.
Sure.
That's pretty much guaranteed that you're either going to make bonds or you're going to be gone.
So there's a study done out of the DC-9 that crashed, and I've talked about this before, where the plane had all these problems. It was going to crash and kill everybody, but there was an instructor on board, and he sat down, and they did the cockpit recording. They actually landed the plane, and it was all one or two-word little back and forth because they already had so much context. They didn't have time to do sentences. So it was just, do you see that? I got this. Can you do this? We can do that. And it was a very, very quick ping-pong conversation because of that shared experience.
Yeah, and you can do it with one word if you're the guys on the wire.
Yes, I love that. So I use that in my training. Yeah, they do the whole investigation of the scene just with that one word. It's amazing. Yeah. Okay, so last week we were talking about setting servers up on AWS and Azure and places, and we talked about Terraform. And golly dang, if there wasn't an article like the next day on Terraform should remain stateless. And this we have done, I bet you, 6 different ways. We've done it with idempotent stuff. We've done it with replicated data types. We've done this with Greg talking about events with multiple events happening and having to keep state. So over and over again, we get the situation where I am in one spot. There's this complex system over there. I need to change the state of that by sending some sort of message. And this, of course, is what Terraform does. You create one Terraform model, and it can deploy either to Azure or AWS or whatever. But this guy's making an argument, hey, we should keep the model pure instead of, like, having some kind of master configuration file off to the side with all the secret passwords. It should be built into this thing that we check. Even we can keep it locked up with the keys or whatever, but you can't separate the data from the model and expect people to be able to understand it, especially when you got hundreds of lines of data they have to understand at the same time. I think I got that.
I don't know enough about Terraform to understand why I should care about state or stateless.
For us, this would be the, do you record the DDL for a relational database and you keep that updated at all times? That would be the same conversation. And I would. I usually use the DDL in GitHub, and I'll update the DDLs. I'll update the application because you can't have the metadata running one way and your app running. Even if it runs fine right now, how are you going to get back to where you were?
Oh, yeah. Totally agree. When I used to do SQL, yeah, absolutely. The DDL has to be kept up to date, yeah. Tear things down, build it up.
And you want to track when you made changes and why you made those changes. It's these are important state things you need to understand. Okay, so this next one.
Who needs to understand them?
Obviously not us, but somebody else needs to understand. Some really smart people somewhere or another. So this comes in my sour grapes department. As if people don't pay attention to you, you must be awesome. No, it's not what it's saying. He's saying that there is an artist, sometimes you can do things when people don't pay attention to you, that once they start paying attention, it just destroys whatever you're doing. It's a point that we don't make enough. And I'll give a personal example. This book I'm planning to do on functional programming smells. It is a market-driven book. I want to do stuff that coders can use, and I want to have an interaction with the market. That changes the book. And that's fine with me because I want something people consume and to be good. But I won't be talking about Russian poetry in that, right? Whereas the stuff I did on analysis is just me going, well, what the fuck is analysis? Let's go figure that out on my own. If I had had a larger audience, it would have probably ruined that whole exercise. So the market-driven stuff's way cool, but it's not necessarily everything there is as far as creating stuff.
Well, I think you need to set up a system where you get merit badges for obscure thing you can possibly link in.
You know, Newton, he did the example of Newton waiting 27 years to release the calculus after he invented it because he didn't want people talking about it. One of my favorite guys is C.S. Pierce from the late 1800s. He wanted all his papers destroyed, and his sister-in-law refused to do it after he died, and that's one of the reasons he's famous now. Heidegger, same thing. So cool stuff. If people aren't paying
attention. What I'm really wondering about is, so let's say that we were to have one of those people who live today and they wrote one of these quintessential works for the future. What are the chances that they would put modern memes into there as very subtle jokes as they were writing?
Things that you wouldn't even get. Yeah.
It would be like, imagine if we only published the Agile Manifesto now. 21 years later.
He guys should still be fighting politics.
Yeah, what would have happened to develop it?
That'd have been better than the robots fighting. I think I'd give $30 to watch that.
Well, is the change going to happen anyway, just with a different name? Is that what you're saying,
Chad? Who knows? Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, one of the things that taking pictures of your lunch and sharing them does is it just takes away any sort of deep thought from conversation. Everybody's just having these trivial little things that they're sharing, trying to get everybody to share them.
This too shall pass.
So, did the FBI discover gold in Western Pennsylvania? A secret cache of Civil War gold and not telling you right about it? I don't know. I have no idea. Some folks claim they did. So the FBI did a study with a prominent geologist about, is there some buried gold in a certain spot? And the rumor is the guy said, yeah, there's tons of gold here. And then nothing was done about it. But then they locked him up with an NDA. And so the original gold hunters who turned the FBI onto this are saying, wait a minute, we got bamboozled. They found the gold and then they're dumping the data in secret, so we can't find where it was.
So is it still buried?
Yeah, that is what they're saying. If it exists, but you can't get the FBI to admit one way or another, and the guy who did the study, he can't say either because of contracts. But yeah.
Maybe the FBI pocketed that gold.
Yeah, if you see their pet project guy flying, riding a Lamborghini or something, you know, hey, something's going wrong somewhere.
At least it's all black.
Yeah. Yeah.
Black gold?
Black gold. Pennsylvania, first place we discovered oil.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in this, there's also the link of all the FBI documents they released. I think they said one report was one paragraph long, and it's been redacted to the point you can't make out any damn thing at all. And why would they redact studies of, why would the FBI be doing studies of gold underground anyway? I got a lot of questions about this that weren't answered.
Well, was it stolen gold and they're just trying to recover it, or?
Yeah, I mean, the argument is this is stolen or lost gold, and it's best that some police agency like find it. And I think the gold hunters were expecting a finder's fee.
You'd think, yeah, so. I mean, that's the rule at sea, right? You know, is it the same for buried treasure, or? Whoever's property it was, probably.
Didn't they discover some, like, a massive treasure trove of a Spanish, armada with gold, and then they have to give it back to Spain?
Yeah, that was the gold.
I don't think so. When it's found at sea, I don't think that's a rule.
No, it was an argument. See, the treasure hunters found it. It was taken by, like, Venezuela or something because it was their gold. But then the Spanish sued because the Spaniards had taken the gold and it was supposed to. And so it's like billions of dollars you're still arguing about. So if you find a ton of gold, just don't tell anybody. That's the rule here.
Yeah. Okay.
We actually, in our county, we have a gold story ourselves. It's called the Beale Treasure, and it's supposed to be millions or hundreds of millions of dollars of gold. Revolutionary War gold that was buried somewhere within a 10-mile radius of my house.
Hmm.
And if I find it, I ain't telling none of you guys.
You know, have you ever read Cryptonomicon?
Ooh, which one? That's not Necronomicon. Which one's Cryptonomicon?
Oh, it's been a while since I read it, but part of the story is, you know, like a submarine full of Nazi gold. And so actually the story spans decades from World War II to modern day, and cryptology is important, and then also they're tracking down, you know, this submarine that's got loads of gold in it.
Well, you know that, what was it, Turing beat the Enigma machine the Nazis had, like using a pen and paper. I can't get a bubble sort working right, and this guy, like, beat
Well, actually, I have a piece of that machine.
Oh, wow.
Not actually, it's a replica of one of the, from the Colossus machine,
ooh,
which is in, what's the name of the town there?
Oh, it's, Whitehall.
Bletchley Park.
Bletchley Park.
Yeah, so here's one of the, as the Brits call it, a valve. All right, you know, so it's a switch.
Oh, wow.
And they had like 1,800 of these to make this code-breaking computer. Dang. And so they would go through the radio signals and look for, you know, this one trait that the Germans, you know, they always said, you know, some certain thing when they signed off. So they would find out what the E was, and then they could go through and, you know, so it's kind of an interesting story, the whole thing. But after the war, they destroyed the whole thing. And I was a bunch of nerds in England that found, they were supposed to destroy all documentation, all everything, but nerds squirreled stuff away.
Yes.
And now they've rebuilt it. And you can see a working replica of one of these things over there in Bletchley Park.
If you want to do some cool computer stuff, start studying cryptography, because there's some really, really neat stuff going on there. There's the, what was it, Flagg's theorem or something, that you can actually mathematically model how much information is in a piece of text, even if you don't know what language it's in, which is just some weird stuff. That's the same,
so like
ZAPS, ZAPF, I believe that's that ZAPS law. Greg, if you want to Google on, Google that.
Sure.
This is just Ken Markham's brain work. Yes. Okay. I did remember a thing. This is my job here is now complete.
Hey, you got anything on knots, Dan?
Yes. Funny you should ask.
I've been needing this website.
Can any of you? I've got like two knots I can tie, and I want to learn to tie more. And this looks. Can any of you guys? Do you know how to tie like cool knots?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Hell yeah, the taut line hitch, my favorite.
Oh man, I am quite jelly. Damn.
But I guess. Why, you know, just the over 150 knots, don't care. I mean, the important thing is to learn how to tie knots that are useful to a particular application. So tautline hitch is great for being able to put tension on, like whether you're a tent, clothesline, anything that you need, right? So it would be silly to learn 150 knots because you wouldn't know what the hell they're for. Like a clothesline hitch, you know, is kind of like with that. You know, there's certain knots you might use for climbing.
Cool. You want to know what problem you're solving.
Yes.
Correct. There's that, you know, and then try to put two lines together, like for fishing, but with a really tight, you know.
Well, and that's the one, that's actually the one that I commented on, was a barrel knot, also known as a blood knot.
Yeah, the blood knot.
Which happened
right.
to be up there.
Yeah, there's a handful that are important. You know, square knot isn't, you know, like the actual technology behind knots is pretty cool, because it has to do with the stress around the bends and things like that, and you know, like it's actually kind of fast. It's, you know, there's more to it than meets the eye, so to speak. But yeah, that would be overwhelming. 150 knots.
A perfect example of where we might want to use something like, let's say, a blood knot, would be, let's say that I've got a really, really thick piece of rope, and then I want to tie to it to extend it a very thin piece of rope.
Right. Yeah.
you can't just tie a general knot with this. Like, I can't just, like, knot it up using...
And like the classic figure eight that you use when you're tying in your harness to, you know, your rope for, like, your life. So if you're climbing, there's really critical knot. But
yeah, I'm looking at this as, like, monkey's fist, you know.
And I'm checking out the blood knot right now.
Yeah, this is, I like this because you start with, like, a very simple thing. You can look at, like, a piece of rope, or maybe two pieces. And somehow you get some useful value out of that just in, like, you know, 10 or 20 seconds of manipulation. That's amazing to me.
A better example than rope here might be a fly fishing line. So your fly fishing line itself is about 100 times the diameter of your leader.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Very lightweight, the leader, so that...
The leader, we're talking maybe a 4-pound or 6-pound monofilament test. And then so my line itself, it's literally like 1 millimeter across.
Dang. So that's how they get the thing to going back and forth with a stick with the fly fishing.
Yeah.
Because it's so light.
Trying to work out the law.
You are correct, Daniel. The way that you fly fish is that the line... is the weight.
The thicker part.
Because I just, you to get right. My Zebco out and just kind of whale at the air. I never could get the little thing working the right way.
No, it won't work very well with monofilament.
Dang it. See, now where
is
it? I've already learned I can't fish, but now I've learned why I look
just
like
wear your hat, Dan, fish. When you fish. Just make sure you keep your hat on and your glasses.
Well, you know, I learned to fish the old-fashioned way, which means you sat by the dock and drank beer. That was, I think there was a fish involved at some point. I did, you know, every night I fished for a while.
I had a raccoon for a pet when I was a kid. Most kids did, you know.
Yeah. Rascal.
And it was really a nice raccoon. It would go for bike rides with me and stuff. It'd give me a little head massage while we're going. And I would feed it fish out of our pond. We had a little pond in front of the house. You know, like about a half acre. In one summer, it ate fish every day. The next year, there was no more fish.
Dang, bet you had a fat raccoon.
I'd fished it out clean. It really loved doing it. Loved those live fish, but...
Raccoon are fun. Did you read the book Rascal?
No.
Oh, man. Now you're going to have to, even though you should have done it when you were a kid.
I didn't need to read the book. Somebody was writing it about me and my raccoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
So did the raccoon live with you inside, or I mean?
No, it lived in the garage. He had a cage.
Have a car? Okay, had a cage. You put it somewhere at night. It didn't wander off in the woods. Okay, so you didn't.
Definitely have wandered away.
You weren't risking rabies, was it? I don't know where
it's going. No, you know, it was a kept raccoon. It didn't have rabies.
Kept raccoon. I had, like, jewels and... I was in a life science class, and a friend of mine missed a couple days. I guess it was seventh grade. He comes in, and teacher said, Jeff, why'd you miss a couple days? He said, well, I was bitten by a fox. And the teacher said, was it a rabbit? And he said, no, it was a fox. I mean, that's a bad joke, but he honestly thought the guy was saying rabbit.
Oh, that wasn't a joke? It was a true story?
Have you guys had rabbits? Speaking of rabbits, have you had a pet rabbit? Oh, yeah, he was actually bitten by a fox that was not rabbit. But
in regard to the question about pet rabbits, I think I actually mentioned it before. I used to work with a guy when I was living in New Orleans who ran a rabbit sanctuary.
This would be
around Easter, you would have, like, all the parents give their kids rabbits. And he ran a rabbit sanctuary where it was very clear to the parents that I'm going to eat these. But for the kids, when they came, there was, like, this whole nice thing where they would put them in. And
there's this sign, you know, rabbits, you know, cuddly and tasty.
It's reminding me of 1984. No, not Animal Farm. Remember how Animal Farm ends? With the workhorse. You know, he's been promised for working so hard his whole life for everybody else and getting nothing but a couple of grains of oats every week that he would have this happy end of life. and then they truck them off to the glue farm.
Oh, man.
There you go. A sticky situation.
Oh, yes. Especially for that horse.
Rabbits, when I was working at the Naval Air Propulsion Center testing cruise missiles, they had a community garden, and some rabbits were just, you know, were disturbed. They came back the next day. The mom still hadn't come. So then I pick up these two baby rabbits, and I call my sister, who knows everything about animals and vet type stuff. She says, oh, well, you're going to have to feed them all the time, like go get baby formula, Similac or something like that. So I embark on this. So these commuter rabbits, they come with me to work, and, you know, I have a timer. I'm, you know, feeding them every couple hours. I forget what, a couple of drops. Well, they shockingly lived, and, you know, we're starting to get bigger and bigger. And, you know, I even had them with the Rottweiler, and we'd be commuting back and forth to, you know, my parents' house and girlfriend's parents' house. And so they're definitely the commuter rabbits. And finally, you know, when it was getting harder and harder to contain them, you know, and keep them around, they were still pretty wild. We were lived out, you know, near these woods and stuff like that. So we let them go, you know, and you'd see them around. But yeah, they were funny. You know, they they're real cute when they're little.
I found them to be quite smiley creatures as they get older.
They've got great math skills.
Rabbits are good at math.
Yeah, multiply.
Yeah.
Look, triples.
They're very bad at defense, that's why. Their defense is multiply.
I'll never forget the first time I was in the Marines, and I was going through the chow line, and I got some fried chicken. And I'm like, hey, that's pretty good chicken. And the guy nuts, nope, that's rabbit. Oh, wow. Everything does taste like chicken. Shit. Damn. Okay, so I have, speaking of like nerd envy, this guy, this project, this gives me major nerd envy. This is Electronic Settlers of Catan tiles. And so it's a home project. You build, you create these LCD tiles, and you can play Settlers of Catan with a assembly you make with little computers. This is awesome. Position-aware partial mesh network. Yeah, this is freaking awesome.
Cool. What does it cost?
So this is one guy doing it, so who knows?
Oh, okay. You can't buy a kit yet?
No. He may not. I don't know if he'll make one or not. He said he just drew up, hand-drew the PCB. You can see a picture of the PCB.
The networking part was the most interesting of it.
Yeah.
Because it's essentially built as a peer mesh.
Yes. Mesh networking is a way cool.
So I can only see what's next to you. You can't see across a tile.
Correct.
Yeah, it's real cool. Yeah, you don't have a frame buffer, so you have to generate a whole core scan lines on the fly, which is, oh, that's wild.
Yeah, so there's some physical isolation of the radio waves or something, or
yeah, it's hardware, I believe. He does it's a mesh network, but it's a wired mesh, if I'm not mistaken. I need to look at this again.
Oh, probably when they plug into each other, it looks like.
Yeah,
right?
they have an interface, yeah. And you build this up, and it knows which ones are next to the other wires. Yeah, God knows how you would do that with a with Wi-Fi. I don't know how you'd figure out. You'd have to have some signaling mechanism.
Okay. I'm looking at it. Cool.
So there's a genre of Settlers of Catan mods, and it is really cool. There's some guys do some inlaid wood ones. There's been several electronic versions. It's a fun nerd game. You guys play Settlers?
I have.
Yeah, I've played it a few times.
My son, Megan.
Think I've actually played it.
Oh, my God. Well, we're going to have to play
it. There's a kids' version of it, too, so my granddaughters are playing it. Except it's maybe not as much strategy and a little bit more luck, you know, by rolling dice and stuff, but, you know, get them the idea of, you know, the whole, you know, build up a network of resources.
It's like a simple set of stuff, but every game is completely different because you reassemble a new game every time you start playing.
It'd be fun to do something like that, you know, take it to ride sort of, or risk, you know, build a different kind of a map.
Yeah. Hmm. Very much so. Yeah, all of my kids are now moving out of town, so I'm looking for some online like board game playing stuff. I think there's a lot of them out there.
Where are they going, Dan?
I see. Youngest son and his wife moved to Connecticut, and then my youngest daughter is talking about moving to New Hampshire, and so it leaves me two down with two to go.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, running out of kids.
Yeah, mine are kind of spread around, too.
Well, it's ironic. I wish them the best, and they're doing the right thing. Having said that, it's weird because we kind of stayed here for the longest time because of the kids, because we didn't want to keep moving them around different schools and everything. So now that they're old enough, they're getting the hell out of Dodge, which I can't blame them, but it's just kind of weird. It's like, you're finally running away from home, dang it.
Connecticut's a great place to go because you can just spend so much of your income on taxes. Wonderful.
You can. I like New England.
Yeah, what's your daughter thinking?
I don't know. You know, both of them married somebody. My son married a girl from Connecticut. My daughter married somebody from New Hampshire. So they married these people from out of town. And these people love New England. So everything good. The sun always shines. The water's full, pure, and the fish are happy. It's
a nor'eastern
place.
I've been in Connecticut for quite some time, and I grew up here. Connecticut's not all bad. You just have to stay away from where people live.
Yeah, which is like Lime Rock Park. That's in the middle of nowhere, and you can go race your car around it. It's actually pretty fun. And I went there a couple times. It's like you would never accidentally drive past here. Like, holy shit, this is in Connecticut. It's in the middle of nowhere.
I lived in Hamden for about
6 months. Well, and it's like my mother. She lives out in Ashford, which is out in the middle of nowhere. Literally the middle of nowhere. But it's actually a cool place if you go out there.
I like Connecticut. The taxes suck. I think it was most close to a year I worked there, and I spent the first month looking at houses all over the state. So I did a lot. Fairfield was way expensive and cool, and it was some cool places there.
Speaking of the middle of nowhere, do you know what the best thing about being in the middle of Nebraska is?
You're on a hill?
Nope. No matter which way you go, you're leaving. Sorry for all you people out there in Nebraska. Just kidding. It's just a Nebraska joke.
Corn. Lots of corn.
Corny joke.
Yeah, it's a corny joke.
I think I worked with somebody who might have been from there, and could he have, like, memorized all the county? Is there some kind of weird numbering strategy or some kind of weird... Remember, he memorized something about Nebraska. This is a really...
Was that Ron Jeffries? Because he went to school there.
Oh, my God.
I don't think so. That's a really shitty story because I can't remember if it was just memorized all the counties. You know, like something dopey about Nebraska.
We spent a few weeks in New Zealand and people ask me about it. I'm like, sheep.
Yeah.
That's it. That's just sheep. I've never seen so many sheep as I saw it. It's just everywhere. Sheep.
You're going to need to head over to Wales at some point.
Yes or no?
Yes.
You can go for something else.
I love New Zealand. Actually, I love the mountains. It's a fun place, but God, they got a lot of sheep there. Dang.
No.
Probably more than people.
I think it's like a 10-to-1 ratio. It's a lot. And then they had these signs that they would say, it was kind of mommy state stuff, like, put your seatbelt on. It's that simple. Be careful where you drive. It's that simple. Brush your teeth. It's that simple afterwards. And I'm like, just shut up.
But where is that?
New Zealand.
The lockdown.
Yeah, just close the borders. It's that simple.
Yeah, I mean, everything was do this. It's that simple. It's like, wow, thanks for making this simple for me.
Yeah, that's what we wanted.
Yeah, I had difficulty with complex things, so I'm glad somebody's looking out.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like the government to help you out.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So what have you guys been consuming this week? Any books or movies?
I got a good one to report on. My wife and I listened to Only Woman in the Room on our drive back. You ever heard of this?
Nope.
It's about Hedy Lamarr. What do you know about Hedy Lamarr?
Oh, that's a great story. I think my wife and maybe one of our daughters, all I remembered was the gist was that she had an amazing life.
Yes.
In terms of like weird and, you know, amazing inventions. And plus she was like a film star, right?
But she's like amazingly beautiful, a successful actress. She was first married to a guy that was a munitions manufacturer, and he would supply both sides of wars, including, you know, the Nazis.
I think that's totally capitalist.
It was interesting. And then she goes on to discover frequency hopping. So she left Europe and, was trying to become an actress in the United States. She'd been an actress before, but then she's a musician and she was really smart. And she also had studied math and things and was also self-taught in a lot of stuff. And some of the Nazis she talked to when she was being held captive by her husband were telling her about the vulnerabilities of their torpedo systems and how they used a single radio frequency and it could be jammed. And she says she's playing piano with one of these guys that are playing two-part piano, and he kept changing the songs on her, and inspiration came to her that, oh, you could use an approach like this for guiding torpedoes. Keep changing the frequency. And then they went off to go figure out how to do that. And of course, at the end, they end up rejecting, the Navy ends up rejecting it because she's a woman. At least that was what the book said. Now, I'm not sure if that's true, if that's why, but it doesn't sound implausible. But she had patents. Say again?
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so she's got patents on this, and then they all ran out. And then Qualcomm discovered...
Yes.
This and built CDMA, wireless telephony, on top of the technology.
Yeah.
There are some other military uses in the meantime, but the military hid the patent, and then eventually became, public domain. And boom, it's the basis for a spread spectrum CDMA telephony.
I didn't know that she'd gotten screwed out of her patents. I knew that she did the frequency thing, but wow, what a sucky story. They wouldn't, because she was a woman, dang.
Well, that's what the book might have had a little. They didn't let it. If there was an axe to grind, they didn't let it known until the end the epilogue or whatever, the writer's comments. But that was part of the message at the end. Is like, here's this brilliant woman who did all kinds of things. They overcame all kinds of things, and had this great invention that could have helped, but was ignored because she was a woman.
Well, it's funny. One of the things we do is I look up actors and actresses on IMDb when we're watching stuff, just for curiosity's sake. And every now and then you run into either a very handsome actor or extremely beautiful actress who are like top of their class in like physics in college or whatever. Like, oh, wow, this is what you wanted to do, I guess, right? It's just weird. For some reason, you don't expect these extremely attractive people to actually be super smart. And when you find it out, you're like, damn.
Her story is really good. She was a really good negotiator too, with all these Hollywood men that wanted to take advantage of her. Really good
that too.
Very good story.
That was Mel Brooks's Hedy Lamarr.
Oh yeah, one of the evil villains.
Yes.
I think Eddie.
Yes.
Hedy Lamarr. Yeah, funny. Yeah.
So, John, what you been reading? You still reading that same book you've been on? Or?
Yeah, another bit today, because I kind of do it at lunch, at the lunch counter at the old Five and Dime. So, it's a once-a-week affair. And, yeah, I read more. And it was funny because they were talking about, sort of the what they call the uncertainty tax. And it has to do with trying to change people's opinions or minds or, get them to move somewhere. And one of the biggest impediments is uncertainty versus, a gain or a loss, but it's more about if it's uncertain, there's a bigger reluctance to do anything. So, the one story was about somebody founding, shopshoes.com and the early .com. I'm surprised it didn't morph into the Zappos story. But it was some other, guy who went around could find the shoe he wanted here, but not the right size, and the color he wanted there, but not the right, you know, whatever. Hey, why don't we have this online? But this was during the early .com type, so nobody shops online, and, you know, things like that around. You know, there's uncertainty. I know if I could drive to the store, I can get something. I'm used to that. I don't know about how do I do shoes online. You know, so that's the little chapter I've read at lunch today.
Greg?
Almost done.
What you been doing, Greg? Books, movies, TV shows?
I actually have a very old paper to cite that I quite enjoyed. Counting large numbers of events in small registers.
Ooh.
Who really did
it? Ooh. Oh, me. But that does sound kind of interesting. That would be kind of, I wonder how you do that.
You mean like cash registers, little tiny drawers?
Mm-hmm. Something like that, but a bit different.
you're talking bit registers.
Cash. Correct. D-H-E.
Correct. And it's basically like, how do we count things that are happening which might be larger than the registers that we have in order to count them?
You need more than one.
Do you want to, is there like an easy answer, or you just, we got to read the book paper, or what?
The whole paper. It's freaking 2.5 pages long.
Ah, well, okay. Well, yeah, I didn't get time for all that. Ain't nobody got no time for 2.5 pages.
Dan, you've got time for it, I'm pretty sure.
I'll tell you what, this is a good selling point for it. There are triangles in it.
I'm there for the pictures, man.
Ternary numbers, huh?
So we have been watching at night a show called Hemlock Cove, which I think should have been named Horny Vampires, or Horny Werewolves, because it's werewolves, and there's like two or three times hooking. It's like almost like a soft porn. We're getting ready to ditch it. It's just very attractive people hooking up, And I started...
Are they hairy when they're doing their little escapades, or are they...
Not yet, but God knows, I know once they run out of material, that's where we're going. Right now, they're just very conflicted. There's a lot of, you know, why am I a werewolf? And it sucks to be a werewolf, and I am so conflicted. Let's hook up with this chick. And it's,
So until a full moon, they just...
Yeah, it's a horny dog thing, except for they're not dogs all the time. But today I started watching something really good. It was We Own This City on HBO Max. And if you liked The Wire, this is put together by the same guy. And it's a look at the Baltimore Police Department in the 2010s. And they did a corruption case, and it was very interesting. We Own This City on HBO Max. I see James taking notes. Because I know James liked The Wire.
I did. I tried to get my wife to watch it with me.
I think The Wire's easily one of the top 10 TV shows I've ever watched.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. We got about 5 or 6 episodes in, and Marilee wasn't captured yet. She wasn't into it, and so...
This is more about corruption, a little, I would say, more anti-police, more rah-rah civil rights department. But it's still good. It's still that flavor of let's take a problem and look at the in-depth of what the problem is, and... I like that kind of material. Once you see that, it's like, oh, this is the way I should be watching the news, really. Okay, let me do my goodbye thing, guys. Okie dokie. It's been about an hour, and you've been hanging out with Nerd Roundup. We've had fun. Glad you dropped by. I'm Daniel Markham. I'm at danielbmarkham.com. That's where you can see all the Nerd Roundups. I will see you on the internet.